Welcome to Healthy by Choice, a broadcast designed to bring powerful healing into your life today. Gaining and maintaining optimum health is possible at any age. That's what thousands are learning at CHIP, the Complete Health Improvement Program offered across the country and around the world. You can learn more at chiphealth.com. But now, get ready to enjoy some proven results and priceless benefits. I'm your Healthy by Choice host, Charles Mills. Do you have trouble sleeping? Does your child have ADHD? How's your sex life? Is it possible to starve cancer out of existence? Welcome to Healthy by Choice, and today we'll explore those and other topics with a very special guest. Dr. Michael Greger is a founding member of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine and serves as Director of Public Health and Animal Agriculture at the Humane Society of the United States. He's also the driving force behind the wildly popular website nutritionfacts.org. I see people on Facebook talking about that website all the time. Dr. Greger, welcome to the program.
I'm so glad to be here.
Now, what sets this man apart from anyone else is that he reviews the latest literature on clinical nutrition. Which literature, you ask? All of it. If it's in English and if it's about nutrition, he reviews it and brings the results to his website, to a quarterly DVD, and to programs such as this. Dr. Greger, let's dive right in. Insomnia. It really is something to lose sleep over, isn't it?
Yeah, it turns out that one in three adults suffer from symptoms of insomnia. And sure, there are drugs like, you know, Valium you can take for insomnia in the short term, but they have a number of adverse side effects, not the least of which is that they are addicting.
Yes.
Some of these other non-pharmacological approaches, such as cognitive behavioral therapy, often difficult, time-consuming, don't always work. And so there's been a real search for natural treatments that can improve sleep without the side effects. And I was so happy to come across a few new studies that point out just that.
You know, when we look at loss of sleep, most of us think, well, it's in our heads. We're worried about work. We're worried about the boss. We're worried about our kids. Does what you're about to tell us help us even if we are mentally stressed at night?
Now, it is important to have good sleep hygiene in terms of, you know, having a dark, quiet room and really kind of doing some kind of de-stressing kind of rituals before you go to sleep to try to clear your brain of that kind of thing. It's good not to exercise right before sleep because it kind of ramps up your metabolism. But in terms of whether or not all that stuff works or not, regardless, there are certain things one can do about one's diet in terms of improving one's sleep. And the first was kiwi fruit. I was surprised to learn two kiwi fruit an hour before bed every night for 4 weeks. I did this study and found that significant improvement in sleep onset, duration of sleep, and efficiency of sleep, meaning kind of quality of sleep using both subjective and objective measurements. So these folks who are having trouble sleeping went from sleeping on average about 6 hours a night to 7 hours a night. So got an extra hour of sleep each night just eating a few kiwi fruit.
Now, does it have to be kiwi? Can it be a hamburger? Can it be a popsicle? Does it have to be a kiwi?
People with sleep disorders tend to have high levels of oxidative stress in their bodies. And so that's why they thought, well, look, what we need to do is we need to find an antioxidant-rich food. But all fruits and vegetables have antioxidants.
Right, right.
But the reason they studied kiwi fruits particularly is because they were able to get money from a kiwi fruit company to fund this study. It's quite possible if the blueberry industry funded the study, we'd find similar things. Because we think it's the antioxidant effect, basically any whole healthy plant food should help us sleep better.
Well, that is good news for those of us who struggle this way.
And there are side effects, but they're all good side effects, right? It has packed with fiber, vitamin C, all sorts of other wonderful things. And so that's the beauty of treating medical conditions with natural dietary therapies, because there's just good stuff that comes along with the efficacy.
It sounds like, and you bring this out often in your presentations, it sounds like we need to be trusting nature to know what to do for us, as opposed to trusting the latest and greatest out of the pharmaceutical groups. That may be a stretch for some people, you know, eating kiwi instead of taking a pill. How do we make that leap, Dr. Greger? How do we condition our mind to accept the fact that nature has an answer beyond what we find in the little white bags coming from the drugstores?
Well, you know, I mean, I think it's kind of human hubris to think that some drug company is going to be able to produce something better, find some component within some natural food. In fact, most drugs actually are sourced from natural products. Mm-hmm. But that we can think we can determine exactly what it is, purify it and somehow, rather than just going to the source as God intended. I mean, it's hard to imagine kind of a greater kind of arrogance. Really. Now, certainly there are things in modern medicine, they're just miraculous things, antibiotics and setting broken bones and things. But for many conditions, just simple plant foods, the plants on this beautiful green earth can have a role in preventing, arresting, and even reversing some of our chronic diseases that plague our community.
That is absolutely good news. We're talking with Michael Greger here, and he is the driving force behind nutritionfacts.org. And he sends out a DVD, Latest in Clinical Nutrition. I have volume 14 here with me today. And we're talking about some of the subjects, some of the topics that he covered in this particular DVD. ADHD. This is a real nightmare for a lot of parents. Tell us about this disease and what you've discovered in the literature about it.
Yeah, so attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, I mean, speaking of kind of the drug model of treating behavior, every year in the United States, doctors prescribe 20 million prescriptions for these stimulants, like Ritalin, which are really literally amphetamines like speed, but giving to kids legally for this hyperactivity disorder. And every year, more and more kids, about 0.8 million kids added to the rolls. So that's just a lot of drugs for a lot of kids. Now, the reason that these drugs are thought to work is by increasing these two neurotransmitters in the brain called dopamine and norepinephrine. But guess what else can increase those levels too? Exercise. Mm. And the effects of exercise, the benefits of exercise, occur literally within minutes. So levels shoot up in our brains. And like medications can take an hour to work, whereas physical activity works almost immediately. Does it work for ADHD? Yes, indeed. I reviewed some of the latest science. The current evidence suggests that both acute and chronic physical activity, daily physical activity, and then immediately after one starts exercising can mitigate these ADHD symptoms. And again, all there is benefits,
yes,
right?
Yes.
The drugs produce unwanted side effects, have a potential for abuse, whereas exercise, not only effective in controlling ADHD symptoms, but essentially no side effects. If you think about it another way, it actually produces physical, mental, and emotional advantages, benefits. So there may indeed be side effects to exercise, but they're all good.
There should be no shock in us, no surprise in us, that there has been a rise in ADHD as there has been a drop in exercise levels for young people. We don't have, you know, what's the first thing cut at high schools? Well, okay, the gym, the recesses, the playing. Let's all just sit and study all day long. Let's go home and sit in front of a computer. Let's not go out to the sandlot someplace and play baseball. Let's just sit at the computer and play computer games. Are you seeing that too, Dr. Greger? Is the medical profession seeing the correlation between lack of exercise and the rise of ADHD?
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the real key players here. I mean, you think, kids were built to move. In fact, we're all built to move.
Yes.
Right? I mean, imagine, you need to get rid of some of that nervous energy. I mean, we're just, kids are bubbling with energy. You need to let off that steam. And you can, fidget around in class and you can try to, slap kids with rulers. Or we can get them out and able to work off some of that. The difficulty, though, working within the system, is that this boost in exercise, this mitigation in ADHD symptoms, only works for about an hour or so. Mm-hmm. Some of these drugs, these slow-release drugs, can work for a lot longer. So that's why it's easier for school administrators, for parents to just dose kids, in the morning or just a couple times a day, and so they can get this. Whereas if you really did want to do exercise, one would really have to do really frequent exercise, ideally every hour, get them out, even just for 5 minutes. But you can see how difficult that would be to work within the schedule. But instead of adapting the system to the kids, to what's healthiest for our kids, we're adapting the kids, in fact, drugging the kids,
yes,
to adapt them to this unnatural system.
Boy, it is time for us to rethink all of this, rethink the health of our kids. It is time for us to wake up and just realize that we are heading in some very dangerous directions here. And I think your message often in your DVDs and on your website is, let's get back to nature. Let's get back to what God intended, as you say. Let's get back to what's all around us. Doesn't cost us a lot of money. We can keep it in our refrigerator. We don't have to worry about our kids sharing it with friends and they're having... When's the last time you heard of a broccoli party? I mean, this just does not happen. We're not overdosing here on recess. So let's get back to these things. Dr. Greger, we have a lot to talk about here. I want to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to start talking about sex and the sex lives of Americans, which for a lot of people is not as they wish it were. And you have some answers for us. So everybody stay right where you are. I'd like to take a moment to invite you to the CHIP website, chiphealth.com. It's a confusing world out there. Lots of information comes at you from so many different directions. How can you tell fact from fiction when it comes to health? Well, at CHIP, we don't deal with wishful thinking. We're not pushing pills or potions. We advocate gaining and maintaining optimum health through lifestyle changes. Changes in what you eat, how you exercise, even how you think and reason. Does it work? Over 50,000 graduates say yes. They've seen their blood pressure normalize, cholesterol numbers drop, diabetes ease, and in some cases vanish altogether, and excess pounds melt away. CHIP is a program that works because it's based on the science of health, science that's proven and amazingly effective. Stop by chiphealth.com to learn more. Changes come when you make health a habit. That's chiphealth.com.
Well, I was about 50, a little over 50, and I had been obese for about 30 years and weighed about 80 pounds over my wedding day weight. I just, you know, felt tired all the time, didn't have a lot of motivation for doing much of anything. I knew I needed to lose the weight, and I needed a program that I could do easily and for the rest of my life. When I found out about CHIP, I began to apply the principles that were taught. I began to lose weight. The weight just melted off, and within a short time, I was feeling a whole lot better. I was able to fit back into my wedding dress for my 35th wedding anniversary, something I had always dreamed of and didn't think I'd ever be able to do again. And as I was walking one day, I had so much energy that I just felt like bursting into a run, which I hadn't done for many years. On top of that, I was able to play with my grandson in the park, and I wasn't getting sick anymore like I used to. CHIP just gave me my life back, and it's a lifestyle that I can do for the rest of my life.
For more information about CHIP and how it can transform your life, go to chiphealth.com. Welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Charles Mills. Our guest today is Michael Greger. He is a founding member of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, and he serves as the Director of Public Health and Animal Agriculture at the Humane Society of the U.S. And I can't think of a better place for you to be a consultant here than the Humane Society, because you're trying to tell us, hey, animals aren't the answers for our health problems and our dietary problems. Nature is, and health comes along with good eating, and that doesn't include animals. Am I on the right track here?
That is true.
All right. Very good. Speaking of animals, we are all one, every one of us. I'm an animal, you're an animal, and sometimes the animal of our species has something called ED. Talk to us about ED and what's the latest on this particular problem facing a lot of people.
Yeah, ED, erectile dysfunction, defined as recurrent persistent inability to attain or maintain an erection of the penis in order to satisfy a factory sexual performance. Mm-hmm. 30 million men in the U.S., 40% of men over 40 are affected. You say, well, look, now we got pills, right? There's pills. We can kind of cover up the symptoms of vascular disease. But what I'm trying to get people to understand is it doesn't do anything for the underlying pathology. It's like taking blood pressure pills to lower your blood pressure. I mean, you can artificially lower your blood pressure with pills, but why not get to the root cause? Treat the cause of the disease, which are these crippled, dysfunctional, disabled arteries, and not only the cause of high blood pressure and heart disease, but also the disease of the arteries in the penis that caused this problem. And so one can think of erectile dysfunction, and our number one killer coronary artery disease is really just two manifestations of the same disease, these clogged arteries, regardless of which organ we're talking about. And it's important to realize that it's kind of erectile dysfunction can predict heart disease later down the road. And so it's kind of like male sexual function is kind of like a penile stress test.
Mm-hmm.
And you can actually measure the blood flow in a man's penis and predict the results of a cardiac stress test with the accuracy of 80%. So a lot easier than a cardiac stress test.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is that men getting erection difficulties in their 40s have about a 50-fold increased risk of having a heart attack or other cardiac event, such as sudden death.
Mm-hmm.
So the first symptom of heart disease may have nothing to do with your torso. The first symptom may come lower down.
And let's explain why that is, because you mentioned in your DVD that the circumference of the arteries in the penis are very different than the circumference of the arteries elsewhere in the body.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So, you know, why does it hit the penis first? Why don't you get the heart attack and then... Well, it's because the penile arteries are about half the size of the coronary arteries.
Mm-hmm.
These are the arteries that kind of crown our heart. So if you look at the so-called widowmaker artery, the main coronary artery, it's twice as big as the penile artery. So if you think about coating plaque, clogging up that artery, by the time you get enough plaque to start kind of softening the penis, there's still blood flow to the heart,
yes.
But as it continues to get worse and worse, only then do the actual symptoms in your heart, you get that chest pain upon exertion, get that chest pain walking upstairs. That's why it hits the penis first, but that's why it's kind of like, you know, erectile dysfunction is like penile angina. It's this window into the hearts of man, and so we cannot just be ignored, cannot just be kind of treated with pills like Viagra, because, again, we're not getting at the underlying function, and, you know, all the pills in the world may not, you know, improve your sex life after a stroke.
Because we don't get atherosclerosis in one particular area. Apparently, we get it just universally through all of our arteries at the same time.
Yeah, it's a systematic disease. People don't understand that. So the same atherosclerosis in our heart that can cause a heart attack is the same clogging of the arteries in our brain that can cause a stroke. It's the same clogging in our limbs that can cause gangrene. And kind of calf cramping when we exercise, and it's the same clogging of the arteries that can lead to an abdominal aneurysm. This is a systemic disease. When we have clogging in our arteries, we have clogging everywhere. It's just the clogs in our heart that tend to kill us. So erectile dysfunction, I mean, men should be, oh, thank God, I got have this, because now...
Yes.
I can change my diet, I can clean up my diet to not only improve my sexual function, but this has got a big warning flag that I have a problem with my arteries, and so we can, you know, hopefully clean up one's diet, reverse the clogging of the arteries, open up arteries without drugs, without surgery, so you don't get these even more serious problems down the road.
You mentioned Esselstyn a couple times in your DVD. He is someone who added that word reverse to heart disease. I'd never seen it before until I read his book, Reversing Heart Disease. We can actually back out of this thing.
Yeah, now that is really the most exciting work. I mean, we used to think something like heart disease was just kind of natural with aging. That, you know, your ticker just kind of conks out on you after a while. But it's not true. In fact, so in studying populations around the world, there are some populations in which heart disease, heart attacks are extremely rare. I mean, extremely rare, like hundreds of thousands of people, not a single death. Whereas here, it's an epidemic, the number one killer of men and women.
Yes.
And so that led researchers like Pritikin in the 1970s to start using the kind of diets these populations were on, which is this plant-based diet surrounding fruits and vegetables and beans and whole grains and nuts and seeds, to prevent heart disease, to treat heart disease. And then Ornish published the first series where they actually had angiographic evidence where you actually take x-ray pictures of people's arteries to actually see them open up without drugs, without surgery. And then Esselstyn is the latest, Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn, a fantastic book he wrote about preventing or reversing heart disease. He showed at the Cleveland Clinic that, again, that you could literally reverse this kind of end-stage heart disease. These are so-called cardiac cripples. These are people who couldn't even kind of walk to their mailbox without experiencing chest pain. These are kind of the worst. Basically, the medical profession had nothing to do with them, sent them home to die in many cases, and they were on their last legs, couldn't do anything. And now, this is decades later, they have their life back because their heart disease was reversed with this healthy plant-based diet.
You know, we often say at the Complete Health Improvement Program, the CHIP program, that this can change your life and save your life. Well, now you know why. When you are taught at the CHIP programs to change your diet and eat differently and eat these foods that are actually good for you, and this reversal can take place, and this is happening just time and time again for thousands of people at the CHIP seminars that they have, I invite you, listener, to spend some time at chiphealth.com and discover for yourself what you can do to do what Dr. Greger is saying in this very important interview today with him. You can back out of heart disease in most cases, and that's good news. That's good news. Our guest, Dr. Michael Greger, he is a founding member of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine. He is a lecturer, author, and a speaker on nutrition, food safety, and public health issues. And the next topic that caught my eye here was a great surprise, and it may be a surprise for many as well, and that is on the subject of cancer. You clarified something that I did not know. One of the causes for cancer, one of the reasons cancer continues, but also that we can do something about that. Share the latest on cancer research with us.
Yeah, this is really kind of interesting. It was discovered, I mean, decades ago, actually, that one of the key differences between cancer cells and normal cells is that cancer cells require, there's an amino acid called methionine in our diet. Now, normal cells, you take away methionine, they're fine. But with cancer cells have what's called absolute methionine dependency, meaning they need methionine or they don't. And so drug companies are trying to come up with drugs that deplete one's methionine levels in the body to slow down cancer growth. But some new researchers are saying, look, wait a second. Instead of going the drug route, wait a second, where is methionine coming from? Methionine is coming from our diet. Right? It's mainly sourced from food. So a better strategy may be to just lower methionine levels by lower methionine intake.
What a concept.
It doesn't even occur, I think, to some of these in this kind of big pharma model about finding drugs to do it. And so the simplest way to kind of starve tumors may be to eliminate high methionine foods for cancer growth control, to lower methionine levels by just making sure we're not stuffing it in our face every day.
Yes.
And so the question is, where is methionine found? What are the kind of foods we really want to stay away from in terms of avoiding methionine? And particularly found in chicken and fish. Number one source of methionine, a most concentrated source, is fish. Number two is chicken. Number three is eggs. Then comes red meat and milk. But these are the foods just packed with methionine. So yes, red meat has less than the white meat, but if one really wants to stick with lower methionine foods, one has to stick with plants, fruits, nuts, veggies, grains, beans. In other words, as these researchers are talking about, methionine restriction may be achieved using a plant-based diet like the one that the CHIP program is advocating.
This is going to shock some people, and I want to say it in love. I want to say it in love because we love people, and Dr. Greger, you are a healer. You want to love people too, but listen to this. I want to say this. If you have a tumor, if you have cancer, if you're precancerous, and you are eating these foods, you are opening the door for cancer to develop further. That's a hard truth to say, Dr. Greger. How do you say it to people? Maybe better than I say it.
Well, you know, I mean, I think it's important to recognize that most of us have cancer cells within us right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's even harder. You want hard concepts.
Yes.
But, I mean, the goal is to kind of die with your cancer rather than dying from your cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's all about slowing the growth of these abnormal mutated cells in our bodies. When we're talking about tumors that can be picked up on something like mammography, just the tiniest little tumors, that's literally billions of tumor cells, billions of cancer cells. So having one, two, a dozen, 100, that's not going to affect you. That's not going to hurt you. It's only when you have billions of cancer cells can it actually affect our bodies, can it actually kind of take over body processes and lead to our demise. The strategy is we need to slow down the growth of these cancers. And by eating these high methionine foods, we're fueling the growth.
Yes.
And so this is not just for cancer patients. This is not just for cancer survivors, not for people that have just been diagnosed or at high risk for cancer. This is for everybody. And this is starting as early as possible in one's life, because many cancers can take decades to develop. So that's why cancer prevention and cancer treatment are really kind of the same thing when it comes to diet. You know, people tend to think, you know, the day they got diagnosed with cancer, that's when they got their cancer, right? The day before they had cancer, just wasn't diagnosed. In fact, years before that, they had cancer, but it hadn't been diagnosed. And so that's why it's never too early to start eating healthier. It's never too early to stop smoking. It's never too early to start exercise. We should do it today.
I want to take just the last couple of minutes of our program here to ask you a question that you didn't address on any DVD I've ever seen, but I have a situation that is in my own life personally. I know of a doctor, a pediatrician, who gets it, who has become a Dr. Greger fan, who is following everything on Nutrition Facts. He's finding it hard to find a job because of that type of focus that he has. How does one, in the medical profession, a talented doctor, enter into the medical profession with this type of thought processes that you are saying here on NutritionFacts.org?
Yeah, no, I mean, there's tremendous resistance within the mainstream medical community. I remember Dr. John McDougall out in California tried to get a bill passed just mandating 7 hours nutrition training for doctors every 4 years.
Yes.
Who came out against it? The California Medical Association. The mainstream medical association, all of them, even the family physicians, came out opposed to just teaching doctors 7 hours nutrition every 4 years. I mean, that just really goes to point out that that's not the priority for the mainstream medical profession. But what's so nice about the an MD degree or a DO degree, medical doctors can practice any way they want. There's still a lot of independence, even with managed care. So, you know, there's nothing stopping them just hanging up their shingle. And, you know, once word gets around that there's a doctor that actually wants to try lifestyle first, right? People may end up drugs, surgery, all down the line, but let's first try in kind of non-emergency situations. Let's see what can be done with lifestyle medicine. You know who's really going to be leading the charge is actually the corporate world, because healthcare costs are really becoming very difficult for our Fortune 500 companies. And so it's costing them tremendous amount of money to keep their employees on these health insurance plans. And so they are desperate to develop kind of wellness programs to keep healthcare costs down. They prevent a few cases of diabetes, you know, and the program pays for itself. And so there's really the most exciting field of growth in terms of lifestyle medicine is actually in the occupational medicine field, is these companies eager for medical directors to get medical professionals on staff to prevent some of these diseases, helps with the bottom line, keeps their employees healthier. It's really win-win for everybody.
Well, I'm going to certainly share this information with my doctor friend. Thank you, Dr. Greger. Dr. Greger, founding member of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, and he has a website. I recommend it to you, nutritionfacts.org. Of course, we always want you to go to chiphealth.com to find if there's a program coming near you that teaches basically what Dr. Greger is saying here. Actually, just line for line. It's wonderful stuff. That's chiphealth.com. Dr. Greger, thank you so much.
Absolutely. And I can't say enough good things about the CHIP program.
Yes. And until next time, this is Charles Mills along with Dr. Michael Greger inviting you to be healthy by choice. Goodbye, everyone. If you'd like more information about Healthy by Choice, call Three Angels Broadcasting Network at 618-627-4651. You can also email us through our website at 3abn.org.